Hey, everybody. You've reached the Mayfair Podcast. I'm Eric.
And this is Josh. It is Monday, April 1st.
April 1st. No fooling.
April Fools.
But then again, like by the time someone hears this, it's like April 4th or something.
Something like that.
So it's not, you're like, the joke is, it's not April Fools.
I get what I'm saying. It would have been the worst joke that I got here and got all set up. And then you're like, April Fools, I'm not coming.
Yeah. On the plus side, at least that vegan burger place is open now. So we could go there after this.
It's not open. They just got a sign up.
I know. It was an April Fools joke.
Oh, that's the worst April Fools joke.
I was like, how can I prank Josh with the most low level, not actually hurt feeling way?
Did you notice right beside it is a Shake Shack opening? That's not the name of the business,
yeah,
but it's
not
like
allowed to call it that. Shake for God Shakes.
Is it supposed to say God in the title?
Well, just because it's like
for God.
I mean, you get the bit, obviously.
Yeah,
but you know,
that's a weird joke.
For God Shakes. Like it almost sounds like a drunk guy saying it at that point. Like, have a
it
couple
almost
more
seems
shaky.
Like pseudo controversial. I don't know.
I think this isn't their first store. There's another one somewhere. I wish I could give you.
Is it like local or?
Yeah. Well, I think it is. But like,
that's cool.
I mean, same with Odd Burger. We hadn't heard of until it. Well, still hasn't opened up. But
yeah.
But then we found out it was like
a small Canadian chain.
It was some weird Brockville or something. There was some random. I think there was
like half a dozen or eight of them or something.
I wouldn't even have known. So yeah. It's like I think of that sometimes when I'm places that aren't here, and I'm like, oh, what's this new fancy? Actually, that sort of time, we were just in Montreal, my brother and I, just for 3 days. More on that in a second. But anyway, but while I was there, my friend Scott, who I've just turned on to the podcast, who
excellent.
I was, because I was mentioning it, and I was like, you for sure listen to the podcast, right? And he's like, yeah. And so he's like, mainlined 7 or 8 episodes in the last couple of days, I think.
No, go back to the beginning.
He's loving it. But the point is, he took us to, we were like, oh, we need to get something to eat. And he's like, oh, there's a place called Bustan, which is like really good shawarma place or whatever. And we're like, oh, for sure. So we went in and he's like a regular and the guy knew him and got this spicy chicken sandwich. And so we all got the sandwich. So good. But anyway, on the bus ride here, there's one on like right by Rito. And we were just at a stop sign. I was like, oh, Bustan. Yeah, it's that thing. I was like, literally could have been going here forever.
There's a place in Montreal called Au Vive.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
It was the first kind of burger, not fast food, but like a burger joint vegan place that I went to years back,
okay.
10 years ago. And they're so good. And I wish there was one here in Ottawa.
Same with Lola Rosa. We go there all the time. And it's in Montreal, there's 3 of them. And it's vegetarian. I don't know if it's all vegan, but it's all vegetarian for sure. And they have chickpea French fries. And they're the best. They're absolutely the best. So like that was the first place we went after we got off the train. Hit up that place. So good. And there's another one called Copper Kettle, I think. Copper is something. I think it is a vegan place because they don't even let you have cream in your coffee.
Take that.
Yeah, which was fun. It's like, it's fine, but it's like when you're not expecting it and you're trying to order and you're not vegan and it's the morning and you don't know what you're doing.
And they're yelling at you to get out.
You're literally like, oh, I'll get a coffee with cream. And they're like, only oat or whatever. I was like, okay. Like, I mean, if that's all there is, then sure. It was good, but we fluctuated between vegetarian places and meat places, like a smoked meat. We went to Schwartz's Deli, you know.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. And like we went to Expectations, too, which is not, you know.
That's here.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, well, this one I've at least heard of, so.
There's some meat places in Montreal, because there's one place, and I'm not even joking, where they serve the craziest meats you can get a hold of.
Yeah.
And they'll have horse and kangaroo and stuff on the menu.
Yeah, no, there was one that my brother joked about going to, and I don't even remember the name of it, but it sounded like, he basically said it was the exact opposite of Lola Rosa.
Right.
So I'm assuming it was, I didn't follow up on that because I was like, I don't need to know about the crazy meats shop.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, to further shout out my friend Scott, like he just got promoted to full-time in the Montreal Symphony.
Oh, cool.
He's like a fancy schmancy violin player. He doesn't like to be called fancy schmancy, but anyway.
That's on his business card.
Yeah, but we got started working with Brad, former Mayfair guest at HMV.
Oh, wow.
And so Scott was like one of the 3 basically classical kids, we called them, even though one of them was like, she was like 60 years old, but anyways, child at heart. They were the kind of the go-to whenever someone would come in and be like, do you have Box, you know, 4th Overture by Shemendi or some composer, whatever? And we're like, oh, Scott, or, you know, you look for some classical person. And the same, it would work both ways if they were coming in looking for an obscure horror movie or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it was cool. Like, I mean, you did learn, you picked up stuff as you went along, but it was cool. And so now he went from being like working at HMV to being in the symphony orchestra. So
it's always jobs like that, which are around, that's someone's job.
Yeah.
Like someone's, and I've witnessed it at the NAC, going to NAC, witnessed people walking to work with an instrument in tow.
Yeah, he take, because I was like, do you leave your thing in like a locker? And he's like, no, I take it back and forth. And I was like, to me, that sounds terrifying in a way, because I'm picturing it being like a Stradivarius or something, like, which I've heard of. But no, like, so he took us around and like he got us, we were going to be there anyways. And I was like, oh, you want to meet up? And he was like, oh, I'll be at work. You know, it's so funny. But I was like, is it sold out or $300? Because I was like, we'd like to support you. And so he got a sweet deal on tickets. And he was like, the funniest part was he's like, oh, you know, I kind of went for the best sound. So like, you might not be able to see me. I don't know how good the seats are, but you know, the sound will be good. We get there. We were 10 rows back.
Yeah.
And there was, I was like, these feel like really good seats. I was like, I don't know how this could have been better.
That happened to us. It was this random thing. And it's funny you mentioned sound, where they said, for whatever reason, this thing we went to, I guess the front row didn't have great sound, whatever kind of stuff.
Ironic, there. Because you'd think people are like tripping over themselves to get there.
Yeah, so we were front row, knees touching the stage. And it was a really weird experience because...
Were your knees really touching the stage?
Pretty close, yeah. Because you're jammed in there,
That would kill me.
Oh, yeah. You would have had your feet up on the stage.
I can tell if you were just being cute or if you were like literally touching the stage.
No, you were pretty close. And my friend who works there, I told him that at one point I for real could hear someone off stage going, okay, send out the conductor. Just man. That. And... I didn't hear it through the whole show. It didn't ruin the show, but I really got this behind the scenes vibe. And he said that he told her that, and she was really embarrassed because the whole, like,
oh no,
not to ruin the show, right?
So you were trying to, you thought it was a fun story, and then you got someone fired.
But I was like, I was front row, house left, as close to her as I could be. So we were so close, but I said, if I was super rich and could buy any seats I want, I would not be buying those seats. No. I'd be buying them like 10, 12 rows back center or something, you know?
I had seats like that for Too Fast, Too Furious because it was free passes. And I was like, oh, I'll just go at the last minute. And it was really... And I still enjoyed the film, but, you know, I think had I paid money for it, I would have been furious.
It's so funny. I always sit here at the Mayfair, front row center, up in our little balcony, which only has two rows in it. And the other day, we had a rental, and they were doing an introduction. Basically, I had to go and turn off our spotlights and then run upstairs and start the movie. So as they were wrapping up and saying thanks for coming to our show, it's weird because I never watch a movie down there. I was sitting, I just basically sat for 30 seconds as they finished. So I was sitting front row, kind of house right.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there, and I was like, wow, this is really close. This is a different experience to watch a movie. But sometimes, like during Saturday morning cartoons or Rocky Horror, there's people sitting in those seats. And they're not bad. I'm not used to watching a movie that close. And we have some patrons who purposefully sit front row center.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, no, and specifically at cinema, there's a few where I don't notice till I'm up there doing a speech. And then I'm like, oh, it's those people. And then I'm like, do I say hey? But you're trying to psych yourself up to give a speech. So you don't want to, like, there's been times where they're like, hey. And I'm like, oh, hey. And then I'm like, what the hell am I talking about now? But I have sat in your seats, though.
Yeah.
And I will say, to tie it back to your other story, my knees were literally touching the
stage. Yeah.
So, you know, luckily there was no one sitting to my left. So I was able to do the side leg thing, and it was fine.
I have a couple of other tall friends, and when they sit up there with me, they will sit, if it's not the super crowded nights, they'll sit a few seats over to have that leg space
smart
around the corners of the half balcony wall.
Yeah, you always have to have a backup plan for the chosen seats because, you know, as you know, I like that love seat, but everybody likes it. So, you know, I cannot never assume. So I did come for They Live as well as cinema.
Right.
And so the issue with that is like, you're either going to take an Uber to get there half an hour ahead of time to rush in and get your couch, or you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to just be chill, get there on time and not miss anything. You know, you sit where you sit. But that's good because you get an extra half hour with your wife or you're chilling. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I got in there and usually my go-to is the seat right behind the couch on the aisle. I like an aisle seat, you know, just put my legs in, whatever. And so some guy, there wasn't someone sitting there, but next to that seat, someone had put their jacket and stuff and was in the third seat over.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I can tell, you know, neither of us will be happy if I sit on, you know, we're not going to enjoy that. So I was like, okay, right across the aisle from that on the corner. So behind the easy chair, basically, that was free. And I was like, you know what? I'll give that a try. And it was great. I shouldn't be giving away my secrets because now someone's gonna gun for that seat. But just to say, for someone with not the best eyes, you know, it was kind of nice because when you're sitting at the other seat I usually do, there's a couch in front of you, there's people in front of you, which is fine. But when you're here, it's basically the aisle. in front of you.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? Like, this actually worked out pretty well. And there was nobody in my row. So I had my tea, I had my water, you know, I had everything. And I was like, this was okay, you know? And then, of course, when cinema rolled around, Andrew had to boot everyone out in between. And so I quickly stole back my couch that I wanted in the first
victory.
Place. Everybody wins.
It's funny. I remember, was it called the Elmdale?
Yeah.
By the Parkdale Market?
The Elmdale is a bar.
Okay.
But
I think
you're talking about the theater?
The cinema, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a little, I'm pretty sure it was the Elmdale. It was a little two cinema, I don't even know if you call that a multiplex, a mini multiplex.
I think it's a church now.
It is a church, yeah.
Okay.
And I talked to somebody and they said there has been attempts over the years to get it back to be a cinema because unlike sometimes when that happens, like it still has the sloped floors and still has the projection booths. Like it didn't get gutted.
Yeah, that just seems awkward a little bit for the church. You're just like, whoa, it's so hard. Getting closer to God already. Whoa.
But that place, I remember, it was impossible to get a center seat because when you walked in, the aisle was right down the center.
Oh, jeez.
And to the left and right were the seats.
Interesting.
And both of them were small. You couldn't sit front row center because the center, what would have been, I don't know, three seats was the aisle. So you could sit, the closest would be left or right aisle center.
Yeah.
But that was it. That's how they built those little ones back in the day.
Weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Well, I don't know if it's interesting, but random side note from They Live and cinema.
Oh, yeah.
There was a dude there who, and I guess I can't say for sure whether this was a bit. It really, to me, seemed that it was a bit.
Okay.
So he kept laughing like a supervillain at parts maybe that weren't funny. And so there were funny parts, you know, They Live, there's comedy. But then occasionally, like maybe like 30 seconds after a funny part, he'd be like, and it honestly seemed, I was like, is this, I don't want to, you know, maybe someone is really like that, but it seemed like he was trying to egg on the crowd and kind of, and eventually I was like, oh God, don't encourage this guy, you know?
Yeah.
But then eventually people were kind of digging it later on in the movie and kind of laughing at the laugh. And I was like, you know what? This would play a lot better at cinema when it's like more consistent laughter. Wouldn't you know it? He stayed for cinema and he was still doing that. And so like, I have no real closure to this story other than that I was like, it was, because you notice that kind of stuff, you know, where you're just like, that is a specific supervillain laugh.
Yeah, is he a 1930s supervillain?
Honestly, and I'm like, I don't even know, I'm just telling you because I've never experienced that before. It was bewildering. It was a little bit like when Lee is in the cinema and you can hear his laugh.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Like, it felt like it was trying to like rope people in, and that can be funny, you know.
Was
that,
it Robert De Niro style? Was he like smoking a big cigar?
I was wondering, like, I was like, I'm trying to picture it, you know, and it wasn't, not to stereotype cinema, but it's not like, I don't know, some of those people have maybe had a couple of drinks, or,
maybe,
you know,
yes,
maybe
yes.
They come in, you know, smelling like the alleyway or whatever, but still, like, it wasn't that, and so I was just sort of like, it's weird those situations where I'm, you know, I kind of work here, you know, he's not being a problem, but I'm also like, it's Andrew, and I was like, is there a scenario where I go tell Andrew, like, hey, can you go and find the laughing guy and tell him not to laugh?
Make that guy stop having fun.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and I want people to enjoy stuff, and even, like, if the audience is enjoying the funny laugh, then...
Yeah.
I guess cool, but I'm also like it wasn't like we weren't watching Schindler's List, you know, but I'm also like, it's not comedy throughout.
Right.
So anyways, I don't know. There's no, like I said, no closure to that story, but I was just, as I was experiencing it, I was like, is there a scenario where this is the guy's real laugh and he just laughs later than other people do? Like, I don't know.
Lee's funny because a couple times this has happened where I've been at a Comic-Con, crowded one, lots of buzz in the air.
Of course.
And just on the wind, like a coyote.
Yeah.
I'll just hear Lee's laugh.
Yeah, which is kind of like, oh God, it's not like that at all. I can't do it, but no. You know, if you've ever, like, you will never forget it once you hear it.
And then Gwen and I will just kind of like perk up and be like, Lee!
Yeah, it's kind of calming in a way, you know? Like, you kind of feel a little more at ease knowing that he's there. And
he's
like,
always having fun at a Comic-Con or at a movie.
Poster shop or whatever. No, he's, you know, and they love to hear him too. I feel like the patrons, or the, not the patrons, but the sellers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the poster guy. Like,
they
that
know
guy.
They're going to make some money.
Yeah, the poster, I think he was from Toronto or something, but like that guy, I mean, I think Lee's put his kids through college.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he went to, I think it's just called, it's so funny because there's Toronto Comic-Con,
okay,
but then there's Fan Expo. And I think Toronto Comic-Con is a little smaller, but in the same place. But Fan Expo takes up way more space because instead of just one convention center, it takes up three or whatever.
So is he
near
at
the
one,
Sky Dome.
Is he at one now?
No. The one that
yeah, the
he
past
went
one.
To earlier. Yeah.
Because I eventually had to message him a couple of days ago just to be like, you still need me to do cinema, right?
Right.
He'll follow up and be like, oh, what are you playing? And he's only ever vetoed it one time. And even then he's like, well, if you really want to, but And so, because he had said, I'm going to the Toronto Comic Con or whatever, you know, one of the two things you just said.
Yeah.
But then that was like 2 weeks ago, and then he was there last week. So I was like, is this going to be an awkward thing? I'll still go to cinema, but I'm like, do I have to have a speech or something? And that was especially wild because my brother left at, I think, 5 p.m. And then they live was at 9:30, whatever. So I had like 4 hours with my wife after a week of kind of being gone doing family stuff and all that, you know. And so I felt a little guilty, but I'm also, it was nice to have a built-in excuse to be like, oh, I gotta go. I'm presenting. I said I was gonna do it, you know. And so indeed, he still needed me to. Everything went off swimmingly with a little extra supervillain laughter here and there.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it was a pretty wild week.
So let us chat about the movies upcoming Friday, April 5th through Thursday, April 11th.
Okay.
So two holdovers are two Oscar-winning movies, Poor Things and American Fiction, are being held over for a second week.
My good friend Scott has raved about both of these.
I haven't seen them yet, but I will during our run.
Yeah. He said this year is one of the most impressed he's been with the Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, there hasn't been like a American crash where I was upset that it was nominated.
No, I think the only one he didn't like was Maestro. And I don't know if that's because he's in a symphony and is like, that's not
what
it's
I bet.
Like.
That's interesting. He was probably watching that being like, that's not how you do that. That's upside down.
Yeah, that's not even a violin he's got over there, you know? So
That's a banjo.
Yeah, and I was like, I got to be honest with you. I was probably not going to watch it anyway. Like, no offense to Bradley Cooper or anyone like that, but I was just didn't really care.
Liked it. I didn't. 5-star love it.
Yeah.
But still did not dislike it that I would be like, boo.
No, but if it was about like a comic creator who runs a cinema or something.
Yeah.
Then you might be like, oh, this is just not how it would be at all.
That's everything like that. Like, you imagine any movie about a doctor or an architect or anything, any profession, the person in that profession probably watches it and goes, you're getting that wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I trust his judgment on this, but he did, he raved about these two and the holdovers he quite loved.
Oh, I love the holdovers.
Yeah, ironic, because you just mentioned holdovers, but we're not playing that particular movie, but you know.
Yeah, so Poor Things and American Fiction, two very different films. Poor Things is kind of a weird Frankenstein tale.
Yeah.
And American Fiction is about a guy getting fed up with the state of black literature in the States. And so he writes a book purposefully that he doesn't like and gets really famous from it.
Nice. That's
it's almost like a producer's kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds semi-familiar, but you know, I've heard nothing but rave reviews. Anatomy of a Fall as well is another one I haven't seen yet, but
yeah, they're all
Scott
good.
Raved about that. So I'm like, I'm so far behind.
I haven't seen an Oscar-nominated film this year where I went, oh, I disagree. That was horrible.
No, honestly, like, I can't even think of one.
I think the trick worked, because remember 6 or 7 years ago, maybe a bit sooner than that, there was the hashtag Oscars so white.
Sure.
And I think on the heels of that, they diversified. Mm-hmm. They got rid of a bunch of the boring old white people. And they made sure to not just nominate 5 Merchant Ivory movies.
Yeah.
I have nothing against that subgenre, but sometimes you'd look at them and it was all boring old white movies.
Yeah.
And now you have stuff like American Fiction or Everything Everywhere All at Once sneaking their way in there.
And eventually boring old white does die off, so I don't know. Maybe it's just like a natural selection thing.
It's like anytime we went to the Chicago Art Gallery.
Okay.
Which is famous because that's where Ferris Bueller and his friends went. And I got the picture. I was lucky enough to get a picture.
Of course.
But there's a whole subsection there where there's all this great modern art and great stuff. And there's a whole subsection where it's just rich old white dudes. And I'm like, I don't care about walking around here for an hour.
Oh,
kind of skip that part.
Like a top hat and a monocle or something?
It's just rich. It would be like getting a photo and putting a photo of yourself up in the living room. That's what's the equivalent of.
Yeah, have a whole separate thing, like a different museum for that. So Josh
rich
can
old
avoid
white
it
guys.
Entirely.
Yeah.
Save a lot of time.
Our Ottawa premiere this week is a really cool looking documentary called Carol Doda, Topless at the Condor. It is a documentary about the 1960s, and she was the first topless dancer in San Francisco and became a giant pop culture tourist attraction, controversial, embraced, written about. And so this is a documentary about her being the first topless dancer at a burlesque show.
I'm sure there must have been protests, too, outside.
Like, I bet.
There had to be.
Yeah, it went to court, I think, dang, because it was deemed, like, think of the children. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That doesn't surprise me at all, but, like, you know, I totally forgot we were playing this. The trailer looks fascinating.
It looks really cool, yeah. Yeah,
no, this is one of those ones where I'm like, I can already tell that this is good.
Yeah, and then we kick off our George Romero, Tom Savini month.
Which was not known about when you first announced Dawn.
I believe.
Then you came through. It was like a 1-2 punch where you're like, oh, hey, Dawn of the Dead, first time in a while. What about this?
This is an example of, I think we booked Dawn of the Dead and then Lee was like, oh, we can do something fun here. So what it is.
You're telling me the biggest Romero fan thought yeah. that he saw an avenue to play more yeah. stuff. Okay.
So it's one movie that George worked on solo and one movie that Tom worked on solo and then two collaborations, Dawn nice. Of the Dead and Knight Riders, they worked on together. Maniac is funny because it gets called a Tom Savini movie.
Right.
He didn't direct it. He did the effects, but they are so monumental that people kind of call it a Tom Savini movie.
And he is in the movie.
And he's
well.
In the movie
He gets
well.
His head blown off, which is, yeah. I love the idea of designing your own head to get blown off with a shotgun.
And then Crazies, which George worked on right before hooking up with Tom Savini doing Dawn of the Dead and all that other stuff.
It was 73, I think.
Yeah.
And that's like the year before Texas Chainsaw. That's always how I think of it anyways. It's interesting to see horror movies from like pre and post, you know, and yeah. especially low budget, you know, and like the Crazies is, I love it. Honestly, both. The remake is quite good, I'm going to say. It's bigger, you know, more bombastic, but the original, I really think it kind of gets overlooked a lot because, yeah, it's not one of the Dead movies or it's, you know, not like Martin, something like that. But it's like, it's really like it reminds me a little bit of like Shivers or like that kind of like the early Cronenberg stuff where like you can tell it's low budget but there's a vibe and it works and it kind of gets under your skin, you know.
I haven't watched it post COVID.
Okay.
And it's kind of watching that kind of movie during COVID is kind of, it's so funny. You would assume that movies like that people would want to avoid.
Yeah.
But during COVID, all those kind of movies we're doing very well on streaming services and Amazon and stuff like that, which is so bizarre that people would want to be like, oh, this is a horrible thing we're going through. Let's watch this tonight.
We're all emotional masochists, as it turned out.
Pretty much, yeah. But I'm like, I guess maybe during World War II, people were watching a lot of World War II-themed soldier movies and stuff.
It's true. And one thing that this movie has going for it, if you're a fan of Dawn of the Dead, is that it has a heavy role for the dummies guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who is, I have no idea his name, but anyone who's seen Dawn of the Dead, you know very well who I'm talking about.
And then later in the month, we have Knight Riders, which is funny because this isn't a spoiler or anything, but in my younger days, I assumed Knight Riders was kind of a Mad Max kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not even a horror movie at all.
No, because you see the poster and it's like a guy on a motorbike in a suit of armor.
Or like Rollerball maybe even.
Yeah, I thought it was like that. But no, it's about a cosplay troupe.
Literally, led by Ed Harris.
Led by Ed Harris. And their turmoils as a performing group family.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies that the critiques of it are like, if any Romero movie deserves a second look, it's this one, or this is like completely forgotten. And I think it kind of languished in VHS land for a while.
Yeah, it almost has more to do with medieval times than Mad Max, you know, like it's just like, cosplayers, as you said. And like, and this was one of the movies where they actually discovered in the Romero archive after he passed, there was, I don't want to call it a director's cut, but a longer version, an extended version, which I think was like 20, 30 minutes longer. And it's not a short film either.
No. Yeah. And we just have the traditional film, which is like 2 hours, 20 minutes.
For sure. And I don't know if the other one will ever get a release in that way. Because, like, honestly, it's not a popular film. Like, I'm not saying that in a mean way, but it's just, like, it's not really that well known.
And there's sometimes, especially with George not around anymore, he might be like, no, I wanted those 20 minutes cut out.
Oh, for sure. You know, I'm one of those people that's just like, if it exists, I want to see it. You know?
Yeah, put it on a Blu-ray, bonus scenes.
Oh, for sure. You know, but this definitely, I've seen it one time, and I was pretty young, and honestly, didn't love it. But I think it's because, like you, I thought it was going to be some wild action post-apocalyptic thing. And I was like, what is this adult drama?
And some people say it's kind of like George, like many horror filmmakers, wanted to do other things. Mm-hmm. And you could see it over the years where he kept coming back to horror. But I think it's because other projects he would try to get off the ground. And like, I know, for example, John Waters really wanted to do a straight up kids movie. David Cronenberg wanted to do a race car movie and came close a couple times. And Wes Craven.
Yeah.
What was it?
Music of the Heart.
Yeah. He only did Scream 3 because they're like, I want to do a Meryl Streep drama.
Yeah. Yeah. His 2000 Music of the Heart. I believe it was. Same year as Scream 3 actually. Yeah. So he had two that year.
So you could see these filmmakers wanted to do other things, but were kind of stuck in horror and made some great stuff in there. Yeah. But yeah, so Crazies is kind of just before he kind of went back to the zombie stuff and all that kind of thing.
And that's an interesting tie-in to Carpenter, because he actually was able to do that.
Yes, yeah.
And I mean, yes, he did go back to horror quite a bit, but like, he made so many genres, really.
Yeah, and got to do like non-scary stuff like Starman and stuff like that.
Yeah, honestly, you know, so it's been very cool. I think The Fog is the only one I haven't gotten to see on the GC Fest. So yeah. Like, and I mean, that's a top 10 for me. So yeah, no, it's been had a hell of a run so far.
Oh yeah. And so then also this weekend, we have our 171st presentation of The Room.
Ooh.
And it just keeps doing well. So it's like...
Much to your chagrin, sort of, but not really.
No, it's fun. It's nice to have that tradition of a monthly screening. It harkens back to Rocky Horror, which we also screen monthly. But The Room, like Rocky Horror, has this asterisk beside it in that, say when we screen The Crazies or when we screen It's a Wonderful Life, it's considered a rep film because they kind of go away for a little bit and they come back. The Room in Rocky Horror, The Room for 21 years, has never stopped playing. So it is technically still a first run film.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, well, is anything weird about it anymore at this point?
No,
actually,
yeah.
Now that I say that, its whole thing has been weird from start to now, so it's
I'm curious, like, every year, every fall, are there a new batch of Carleton University students, or a new batch of high school students who are coming for the first time to this 20-year-old movie?
Or grade school students, if Andrew's slacking that day. But yeah, no, it's something to be experienced. It is like almost like the yin and yang of Rocky Horror, I feel like. Without sounding mean, Rocky Horror is a pretty good movie, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't think people are coming to The Room because it's a great movie. So
no.
Maybe at this point we're allowed to say that. I'm not sure.
And our April, it's all listed online right now, but we have, as per usual, we have a pair of cinemas, we have Rocky Horror, we have The Room, and we have Big Shark back for its fourth month.
Yeah, that's right. And it is a cinema back-to-back, I believe?
Yeah, a Big Shark cinema back-to-back. So now you really gotta finally come see it.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. I have no plans that day. I'm locked in for that one. And then, and also, fun, obviously we'll talk about it later, but Dawn of the Dead is playing with a cinema as well on the 13th.
Oh yeah,
That's going to be awesome. And I'm, you know, I already texted Lee and I was like, are you going to do a Romero themed one? But I was like, that feels too obvious. You know, like cinema has to be more silly than that. It's disrespectful to Romero to play something.
And to make everyone jealous, the distributor of Dawn of the Dead, this is the first time this has happened in forever, sent us all t-shirts.
Yeah, to make people even more jealous than they already were a second ago from what you just said.
Yes.
I have found out that they only made 350 of those worldwide.
What? 350?
Yeah.
Wow. I hope nobody shanks me and steals my shirt in the alleyway.
Maybe, I probably shouldn't have told people that. But yeah, no, like that's, it's possible. I mean, maybe it's 350 for Canada, 350
right.
for the US. But
yeah.
From what I heard from someone who works for a theater, the guy who ordered them in the States, well, a guy,
yeah.
He said that there were only 350 made.
Wow. I wonder how soon we'll get offers for our t-shirts.
Well, and it's funny because like I had joined a Dawn of the Dead Facebook group, get these suggested crap. And then I was like, wait, I do like Dawn of the Dead. So I joined that. And so I did post about the shirt just to get some hype going for the screenings or whatever. Most of the people are in the States anyway.
Yeah.
And then, most people were like, oh, awesome. Oh, wow. And I was like, oh, yeah, employees only. And then the one guy was like, can you take the photos underneath glass so it's a bit clear? Because it was like a crumpled shirt. I was like,
yeah.
I'm not taking more photos. What are we doing here?
Can you take a better photo so I can bootleg it easier?
Yeah, seriously. It was like, okay. But no, that was very cool. And I was like, this is why you stay employed here long enough to get a free shirt.
Get a free shirt. And so then I'll just quickly mention, we have two rentals, two special one afternoon only screenings. One is a music documentary called The South, presented by CKCU, a local university radio station.
And what genre is about, do you know?
It is...
Tell me it's about Southern hip hop.
No.
Damn it. Josh, wait. Come on.
Italian-Canadian recording artist Andrea Romalo.
Oh, okay. Well...
To the south of Italy to explore her roots and et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so, that does sound good, too. I thought it was going to be more like a Ludacris-related, possibly some sort of Outkast
Maybe
documentary.
Maybe next time.
All right. Well, I'm here for both of them. That's okay.
And then the other one is called Rocky Road to Berlin. It's presented by the Ukraine Harmony Foundation.
Ooh.
It's a Ukrainian romantic comedy.
Oh.
And it's a fundraiser for various Ukraine things that... sadly are still happening. It's been going on for so long.
I don't even want to say, has it been 3 years?
3 years? Oh my God.
Like two for sure, which
so this
is sick.
Group has done a couple other presentations and they do a really great job and they do like 50-50 draw and they do a little in-house auction for stuff and the money goes to worthy places in the Ukraine. But it's nice this because we did a Ukraine film festival a couple years ago and just by happenstance of what was available, it was all very heavy films.
Of course.
So it's neat that we have a romantic comedy.
Yeah, and I even felt that at the time. I remember when we were talking about that festival, I was like, oh, these all sound pretty
yeah.
pretty dramatic.
But people want to come to these?
Yeah, totally fair. No, this is always a good cause, so I'm looking forward to it.
So that is our films for the week of Friday, April 5th through Thursday, April 11th. Check out our website. We've got all kinds of cool stuff coming up. We mentioned our Savini Romero Fest. We have a classic film noir called Le Samurai, which looks really cool.
When did you announce that? What are you doing to me?
I just put it up on the old internet recently.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I know about that. Well, the soundtrack is apparently incredible.
Yeah.
And it was a huge influence on the Arctic Monkeys' last album.
Oh, that's neat.
I'm a big fan of. I just saw them in Montreal. And so Alex Turner was referencing just a couple of random albums. And one was the soundtrack for Le Samurai. And I was like, I don't really know this that well, but okay. And I've not seen the whole movie. So this is big.
This is the fancy smancy, I think, Criterion 4K re-release.
That makes sense.
So yeah, it looks really awesome. And then
oh man.
Horror movie called Sting about giant spiders that is so new. There is nothing on the internet about it.
I think Bloody Disgusting mentioned the name, but...
I should look again. Maybe some reviews have popped up, but negative or
today,
positive.
Like literally this morning, I think I heard about it.
It's fun. When we screen it the week of April 19th, it's the... I love it when we do this. Makes me feel like a real movie theater. It's the actual premiere date.
Nice.
So it's actual premiere date of this cool looking spider horror film.
Yeah, and Sting is not in the film. It has nothing to do with the Sting.
Yeah.
This is a totally different thing.
That wrestler Sting.
He's not involved that we're aware of, So, but it's still going to be good despite all of that.
Looks really cool.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, everybody. You can check out mayfairtheater.ca for up-to-the-minute updates of films and events that we have coming to the Mayfair and all the social medias. And we'll see you next week for another edition of the Mayfair Theater Podcast. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Oh, wait. I meant to say that my wife was trying to remember a film or short film that involved a bunch of people are different colors. So it's like the yellow people, the blue people, whatever. And you can't mix. But then, by the end of the movie, they all mix. And then everything's in multicolor and it's cool. And there's a yellow queen and all this stuff. And she cannot remember it. So if anybody knows what the hell that is, she's desperately trying to remember that.
That sounds like a weird watch it at school special.
That's what it was. Yeah. She used to watch it at school. And she's like, what is that? And I was like, I don't know. But I'll put out the plea to the podcast listeners. Help us.
But now she learned that racism is bad.
That's true. So there was that.
Taking me no place.
They started something they can't stop. The crazies.
We're all concerned with Evan City, Mr. Hawks.
If we have to push the button, would you say the weapon went off?
Get me the president.
3,614 people are trapped by an unknown enemy. Five are on the run. Can they escape the spreading fury of the crazies?
You can make it. I know it.
Watch it, Bucky!
This is exactly the kind of thing we're trying to prevent.
A lethal terror snowballs into hell. The crazies. Rated R.